This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Danny.
And I'm Gabby.
And this is Clashes, a podcast exploring culture shock in all its chaotic forms.
We know a good shock can shake things up.
So we blew up our lives and crash landed in Paris.
With a delusional sense of hope.
And a dangerous red habit.
I feel attacked. But culture shock isn't just about changing countries.
Almost. It's about embracing the unknown.
From navigating friendships in your 30s.
Awkward. To processing pop culture's oddest obsessions.
So buckle up and embrace the chaos.
One clash at a time.
Right on the magic school bus. Every time. Welcome back.
Hello. Another jingle.
Another jingle for you
Did
all.
Did you record that?
We've gotten some... What do you mean?
Your little song?
What, my little song? From Magic School Bus.
Yeah, but did you just, was that
Oh
on?
Yeah, that was
okay,
on.
Great.
Mike was on. Mike
okay,
was live.
Great, 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 great. Great start.
We've been getting some really, really amazing feedback on our on our Snack and Spiral.
I personally hate it, but I'm glad that everybody's loving it.
It truly sounds like we're not in a good situation. Anyways, everyone come back. Welcome back to episode
5.
Cinque? No.
Yeah, 5.
How do you say it in Spanish?
Cinco.
Cinco. I did the Italian way.
Cinco, yeah.
Today we are going to talk about restaurants, but before that, we'll do a little food
current
gossip.
Events. What's going on?
A little food goss.
Yeah. So I wrote this down. I'm not sure what's going on, so I wanted you to tell me a little more. But
I'm also not. Once again, true to Danny and Gabby, classic form is we love to talk about
we
things we have literally no idea
research.
What we're talking about. The whole like Wishbone Kitchen Bon Appetit drama has been so fascinating to follow, especially because I work in food PR. So I
can
feel
you
like
just like top line, like
top line. Yeah.
What happened?
Basically, Meredith Wishbone Kitchen had a series called Dinner with Friends. Okay. And it was like her giving recipe advice to have like for
how
having
to host.
Hosting and dinner parties. Exactly. And Bon Appetit, the publication, launched a series called Dinner with Friends.
And it's like similar branding, similar colors.
I guess it's a similar colors.
And
like
same
pink
name.
And pink and red. Not revolutionary, but like same name.
Okay.
Same colors. So I get that it's frustrating.
She called them out. She was like, why are you copying
me?
She
called them out on Instagram and TikTok. She like did like, I think like double post. She like was like, I'm very angry. There's way too many similarities. I think she's annoyed because obviously she has a brand. She has like, you know.
And they're much bigger than her. Yeah,
I mean, this is what I feel mixed feelings on.
Okay. Because you think she's bigger.
I think she's more relevant.
I agree.
Think Bon App is amazing. I love a lot of people who work at Bon App and I think they're great, but I think Bon App's had a lot of ups and downs. They've also laid off a lot of incredible people or pushed out of a lot of incredible people.
Media in New York.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Meredith is kind of the next wave of food. I think she's kind of the modern Ina, which is a bold thing to say because you know how much I love Ina.
Yeah,
I have an Ina wig at home. I like to Ina role play in my free time. And I just kind of think she... So that's where there was a lot of comments on the Instagram.
Because people are like, why do you care?
Well, a lot of the comments were like this. Like, of course, the giant saw an idea from the small guy and took it and then ran with it. And I'm like, I just don't know. Because if I, like, I work in media. I work in PR.
Yeah.
But if I saw that as a PR person, I'd be like, don't touch that. Like, you're, she's actually starting to be bigger than you. Like, I think she's just a little more like...
Traditional media is not having
I know,
a good
I know.
Moment.
And I know it's trying. And I'll be honest, I think the girl who did the Bon App dinner party series is like very cool.
Right.
Like, know of her.
Cool.
She's very cool. I know she has her own dinner party series she's been doing for years by herself. I think this has nothing to do with her. And I actually, my kind of hot take is I don't think Bon App intentionally ripped it off. I think it was they didn't do enough research.
That's what
and
I was
going
to say.
It was just a fluke.
But how does it get approved?
But that's the thing. It's like they didn't do enough research. It was an accidental. Somebody should have flagged that, and I don't know why. But the notion of them doing it like malevolently
Yeah, it wasn't an attack.
It just seems like it just was absent-minded and kind of lazy. But anyway, I think like the girl's great. I just wish like Bon Appétit would change the name and like Kendra the girl at Bon Appétit
just do it. Or
address
it and be like, whoa, we're so sorry. We didn't realize we were doing like the same name, same colors or something.
Yeah.
Or at least reach out to her privately.
Yeah, I think so too. But well, just change it. But anyway, so that's kind of the goss and the drama in the food world.
The food world.
Danny, you've got some food news for us too.
Yeah, but like.
Drum roll.
Well, it's actually, so Gabby and I both have Substacks. I just launched mine last week.
Danny's is legit.
Well, not really. I haven't. So, okay. I created a Substack called This Is Probably About Food. It's about culture generally, but I always end up talking about food. So that's why it's called
right.
This Is Probably About Food. And I just really want to get into the Substack culture. So,
I mean, it's where it's at.
I'm going to launch. Well, it's already launched, but I'm actually working on my editorial calendar this week. So I'll probably have some new stuff.
Something you guys should know about Dani is she's a calendar girl. She's going to get you a social calendar. She's going to get you a shot list. Yeah. She's going to get you an editorial calendar.
Love being organized, like not in my life necessarily, but I love having a to-do list. So I just have a lot of ideas of things I want to cover. The number one thing people ask me is like, oh, what are your favorite places in Paris? Or I'm going to Paris next week. Where should I go have dinner? And I never have like a list or a thing I can just send people easily. So that's the main reason I'm doing it.
I have a question for you. How are you going to deal with, I feel like when people ask that question, it's so dependent on their situation.
That's also, yeah, that's a big problem. I mean, it's like a New York problem. When people are like, what's your favorite restaurant? I'm like, well, what's your budget? Yeah. What neighborhood?
Exactly.
What kind of food?
What's your mood? What's your vibe?
Right. So yeah. I kind of want to create different, not guides, but different posts about different things of like, even the other day we had a great breakfast burrito at this place called Sia in the 7th, I believe. And I'm like, maybe I should do just a post of like best breakfast burritos in Paris. They're so hard to find.
Times fast.
So yeah, I think I'm going to do like a bunch of different categories and then maybe have more general ones like by neighborhood or by budget or something like that. But yeah, it's basically.
Can you do best Caesars?
We can do a collab with a Caesar salad situation. I'm sure.
Chaos Caesar.
What is your Substack called?
Mine's called Overthoughts, but it's really just me rambling. Do you want to know what the impetus for mine was?
Sure.
I love to complain, but I'm sort of getting to the point where I'm finding complaining not productive.
Like, let me monetize it.
Yeah, truly. But I'm like, you know, I think I have to give something a little more thought before I complain about it. So I'm trying to give my frustrations, you know, the things I overthink about in a way that's not productive, to overthink about it in a way that is productive, to kind of come to conclusions on my overthinking. So that's my, I've actually noticed ever since I started rewriting again, my relationship with social media has become healthier.
Yeah. Didn't you tell me you felt less anxiety when you kind of put it all out?
Yes. It's really helpful. So it's mostly for me, but I found it helpful to put thoughts down.
Don't you find that weird? Because I found it weird when I was like, I have a Substack and I have like 50 people subscribe.
Oh, like immediately 100. Yeah, I know.
I was like,
I know.
What? People care
about
this?
You guys don't even know what you're subscribing to, but
I thought it was
going to
be like my mom and 3 friends. And it's like, what? So yeah. But it's, yeah, so we're joining the Substack culture.
Yeah, we're in.
And kind of in line with that, we have some housekeeping that we want to just talk about a few things.
So, oh, yeah.
If you are into Substack or you want to create your own, there's an event happening in Paris on March 5th called A New Fashion, Navigating Substack in an Age of Oversaturated Platforms.
Which is actually, by the way,
hosting
it. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
But what are you going to say?
No, but this is like a huge I just licked the mic again. This is a huge conversation. I had a new business call the other day and the founder was talking about this and it was like, you know, what is the relevance of Substack at a certain point? Does it just like negate itself because it's so oversaturated? Nobody subscribes to new ones. So this is a very relevant conversation, especially not only if you read, if you write, if you work in media in any capacity, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a content strategist. I work in social. And the number one thing I tell people is like, you need to diversify where you put your content as a brand or as a person. Mm. So, and I do think Substack is having a moment, but I think it's because people are like, I don't want to be on Instagram anymore. I don't want to be on Twitter. I don't want to be on or
also,
X,
I want to be control. Like when you write, when you're a freelance writer, well, a writer in general, you know this because you worked at BuzzFeed. You really are at the whim of your editor. We were just talking about this. Like, you have an idea and you have to frame it in a way that works for whatever editor, whether it's like your publication or your freelancing. And having your Substack, you're fully in control. And at this point, so many publications just monetize. You know, everything is a gift guide that has affiliate links that is monetized. So I think a lot of people are just truly feeling this need to write what they want to write without these constraints of capitalism. And, and you know, like,
I mean, clicks. Even new media, like, political journalists are creating Substacks because
I mean, really good
there's
ones.
So much censoring and things that are obviously like the entire country's on fire, but a lot of people are like, wait, there's things that I want to say that my editor isn't approving, or whatever publication I'm working for that maybe is owned by a billionaire.
Puck, have you been following Puck? It's like a really good example of this. Puck is like leading the charge in terms of like really innovative, unique. I think they do politics and fashion, which I find interesting, but but great newsletters, great coverage.
We'll put it in the show notes if you're interested in coming. I think it's pretty sure free.
It is free. I signed up. Yeah.
What else?
We also have a really cool friend who wrote a really cool New York Times article. I'm sure everyone here knows what Modern Love is. Also, I love her name's Caitlin, and she wrote the most recent Modern Love piece. It's called My Struggle to Stop Loving Him. Basically, if you've ever still liked someone past the point where it's, you don't know, productive or whatever, it really resonates. I also love that she posted all her email submissions to Modern Love.
I love that. It's like the rejection. It's like we all go through it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, like to see the actual emails. You're like, oh, wow, it's all of us. Exactly. Yeah. It's all of us. We've all been there. Yeah. So highly recommend that. You have a book you're obsessed with that you want to tell everyone about?
Yeah, just got it today.
It sounds like we're doing podcast ads. We're practicing our podcast ads, but for our friends.
Yeah, it's all our friends, which is kind of cool. So I just wanted to quickly shout out my friend Sutanya and her book, Dinner for One. I've been posting about it. If you follow me on Instagram, Gabby just got it today. So hopefully we'll be able to talk about it next.
At Sutanya's house. Hey, Sue.
And it's just a great story. It's basically called Dinner for One, How Cooking in Paris Saved Me. So our friend Sutanya moved here, married a French guy, had the whole love story, and then ended up getting divorced. So it kind of covers everything from like meeting her future husband, falling in love. I'm still in the falling in love stage. And so I keep texting her and I'm like, I kind of like your ex-husband. He's saying all the right things. And she's like, no, Danny. And I was like, I know he's going to break my heart. But right now we're you in like a good spot. You know,
it's interesting to have a book that talks. Have you ever read Heartburn, the Nora Ephron book?
No.
It's like she's like, you know, in love with her husband, but he just is cheating on her nonstop with like one woman. And it's so painful. But I think it does this really good job of revealing this like really painful mix of like massive love and massive heartbreak at the same time. It's not just bitterness, it's not just anger, it like it's vulnerable, it's open,
the emotions.
Yeah,
well, that's what I like about the book, because it opens up with Sutanya being like post-divorce, partying, drinking too much, hanging out, and she describes this one part of like, you know, after you party all night and you're like fucking drunk and you go to sleep and you wake up and you're still kind of drunk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know it well. I know it. I knew it this Saturday morning.
Today. But no, she describes this one moment of like being like, fuck, I'm still drunk from like, or like, and like even deep down knowing like, maybe I shouldn't be drinking this much. Maybe I should feel
because
my
of
feelings.
Love.
Yeah, because you're like heartbroken. So like you can't be alone with your thoughts. So you're out and at the terrace sipping.
Oh, so she was like literally drunk. I thought it was a metaphor.
No. Like she describes this one moment of like kind of waking up in a drunk post-drunk haze, still kind of being drunk and being like, fuck, like I'm actually not doing that well, and having a moment of like, okay, maybe I should get my shit together, where it's like I think everybody has gone through that in some capacity.
No,
and so never. But then she also describes the falling in love stage, like that new love. So like I was like giddy reading it.
Really?
Like, yeah, I was like, oh my god, these crazy kids.
I don't even
kids,
remember what
you know?
That felt like.
That's why I texted her jokingly. I'm like, oh my god, I love this. Like, I'm rooting for your ex-husband. I'm so sorry. And she goes like, no. And I'm like, well,
I'm
right
so
now
amazed.
We're still in love.
Yeah, but I'm amazed that she post heartbreak was able to write about love in that way, because I'm like, as someone who's going, well, how long am I allowed to say going through a breakup? I got like what 6 months from it.
How long?
It's been two and a half months.
No, that's pretty.
But
that's fine.
You know, as someone who's in the midst
isn't
of like
a full quarter,
exactly. Sure. I suppose what does it take? Supposed to take you half the time to recover from the length
something
of the relationship?
Like that, yeah.
God,
you have like
kill me
a year.
Kill it. No, absolutely not. But anyway, as someone who's in that stage, I'm such in an anger stage and a bitterness stage. I can't imagine writing affectionately about my ex. I want to kill him, right? But like, it's just I find that really powerful. Like, she's clearly very intuitive.
That's
with her
what
emotions.
I text her, I'm like, I'm so sorry, but you write falling in love in such a relatable way that I'm like, I'm rooting for these crazy kids. And I know he's going to break my heart in a couple chapters, but buy her book, read it. It's a great love story too. It also touches a little bit on the cultural differences of like her first time in Paris and all these like mini culture shocks. So I think it's not only a love story, but it's a love story of someone. It was like a long distance, New York, Paris. Then she moves to Paris. So it kind of covers a lot of things that we're both very
going through
with,
and circles back to food again.
And circles back to food and basically how food, and when she's having that post-drunk haze, like what the fuck is happening? What time is it? Why am I drunk? What kind of thing? What her like act of love for herself is like, I'm going to cook myself some food because I'm clearly not okay. And I love how it kind of all comes together. Yeah. So anyway, highly
I'm excited to read it. All right, to our topic today. Okay, so Danny knows this, but I just got back from New York.
Yep.
And we both live there, obviously. And I was honestly shocked by a lot of things. I mean, it's probably my sixth time.
Since you moved.
Seventh time back since, okay.
So what was different about it? Or what stood out the most?
Okay, I mean, it's
what
hard.
What was the experience that meant you be like, fuck this place?
Oh my gosh, that should be our episode theme. Okay, it was one experience. We were at the bar. I'm just gonna say the name. Who cares?
Yeah, who cares?
It's called Bernie's. It's in Greenpoint. And I was with a friend and we were having a good time. Well, I thought we were. Maybe I'm like making it up because I had three martinis. but I was having a good time. And we had three martinis. We had both had a meal.
Three each. Okay, so it's like $100 bill.
$100 each.
Yeah.
On just martinis.
Okay.
Probably. Probably 75 each on just martinis. Then had full meal, sides, and then had dessert. And we're in the middle of finishing our dessert and sipping our last martini. I was probably halfway through and the bartender comes over to us and she just goes, hey ladies, a lot of people are waiting for tables.
Okay.
And just makes us leave. Like makes us leave.
What? Okay. Not that this really matters, but what day of the week was it?
Wednesday.
A Wednesday?
And to be fair, we were there for about 2.5 hours. But
at
first,
night?
At night.
Okay.
But we got there early. Okay. Like 5:30.
And was there like a line? What was
going on? Okay, so when we got there, there was open seats and no line.
Okay.
And we didn't have a res and we could sit down. Uh-huh. They didn't tell us.
You sat in the bar.
At the bar. Great. Not even a table. They didn't tell us when we came in, which sometimes they'll do, which like I still find to
be
sad.
Yeah, they'll
be
like, you have a 2-hour window
yes,
or whatever.
But like at least you're warned so you can pace yourself. I wouldn't have gotten a third martini and dessert if I knew we were going to have to like rushed out of there. And didn't tell us. And then when they told us to leave, did it in such an abrupt, rude way. Okay, I'm not unfamiliar with this turning tables to stay alive in New York. And there's like a million ways I think she could have done it.
Yeah.
But I just was floored. And I think what it just did is made me really appreciate aspects of Paris that I think sometimes people find annoying, which we've talked about a little bit on the pod. I just had this moment of really appreciating the joy and leisure and the dining culture here.
Taking your time to eat and no rush.
No rush.
You don't have to order. You can just
you
nurse
could
the
nurse
drink
that
time.
Exactly.
To.
That little glass of wine and a plate of fries for hours. I love that. And I obviously like, I don't blame waitresses. I don't blame bartenders. I don't blame dining culture.
But it ruins the experience.
It's the fault of New York rent.
That it's only about money. They don't care about money.
Yeah. And it's a bummer because I know they have to do it to stay alive. It sucks. Yeah. I do think there's better service culture that could be done around it, you know? So anyway, I think it just made me think. So I thought it would be interesting to, like, I think we both thought it would be interesting to talk today about like
restaurant
the differences,
culture.
Restaurant culture, what we've learned. Obviously, Paris, New York is kind of the focus. But I mean, I'm from Wisconsin. You're from Miami. We both traveled around. It's just I think it's such an interesting, especially as restaurants have just become this empire, you know, in terms of the infatuation, I mean, in terms of all these like, I mean, Michelin obviously started ages ago, but it is a pinnacle of the culture that it's in. You know, it's representative. Like New York dining culture is like a truly behemoth of its own, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a whole world. It's so different now, too. And it's so different from Paris. I mean, the one thing they have in common is they're big cities. That's about it. I would say we're framing this very like New York versus Paris, but a lot of it is going to be like Paris versus the U.S.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
Europe, you're right.
Yeah.
But so basically we have a few things on the list we're gonna
I think service is an interesting one, like to start, you know.
One thing that a lot of Americans complain about in Paris is like service isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning the server isn't checking in on you. You ask for water, it's been 15 minutes, they haven't brought back whatever you ordered. Which I think at the beginning normally that's a normal thing to complain about because you're so used to having a server checking in on you 5 minutes. But on the flip side, they're always trying to upsell you on something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you want another drink? Do you want to get this? Are you still hungry? You know, Where here, they just leave you to it to mm-hmm. enjoy your meal. And yes, sure, maybe it's annoying that you asked for water 15 minutes ago, but I think it's not really intentional. Like, it's not bad service. They're just like, I'm just going to let them hang out. Mm-hmm. I think they don't think about it as like, let me ask every 5 minutes if they need something else. And I think when you go to a French person in the US, they're like, why the fuck are they annoying me every 5 minutes? It's such an interesting like contrast.
And it's interesting. I think what I've been so shocked by is how my opinion of it has changed since living here.
Same, same.
Because I used to find it infuriating. I used to be the cliche American, like, God, can a girl get a bill around here? Like, I just like sitting there, like waving at the garçon. Just kidding. Obviously, I wouldn't do that. But truly, I just couldn't understand. And then one thing I learned that changed my life, you can just get up and go pay.
Yeah.
So that.
Oh, I love that.
I do it almost every single.
Just like, I want to get the fuck out
of here. I want to get up. So I get up and I go pay. It's great. Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll get up and I'll just go order again to the waiter. It's like, it takes 2 seconds. It's not a big deal. It changes your frustration. But now I'm from Wisconsin. So talk about like, hey guys, hey ladies, can I get you anything? Like 2 seconds after your food's come to the table, you're like, I haven't taken a bite. So I think that didn't used to annoy me. And now it really annoys me. I find it pressury. Yeah. I find it, you know what, the specific thing that drives me crazy? When they come over and they're like, would you ladies want anything for dessert? And then you're like, no, thank you.
It's, like it's time for
and
you,
then
though.
they have the check in their pocket. Bill, I'm like, you had it there the whole time. You betrayed me. How did you know I didn't? You know, I just can't stand it. I want them to give me time. Okay, loiter a while. Chill here. Do you want a coffee? Like, take your time.
For me, it's like the way I see it now, and I didn't before, it's, for me, I'm like, you're always trying to upsell me. You don't actually care if I'm having a good time or if I need more water.
Yep.
You're trying to figure out what else you can add on to my tab mm-hmm. so you make a bigger tip, which again, I understand that's literally your job.
And your income.
But I'm like, I just see it as like, fuck, all you care about is money. You don't care if I'm having a good time.
You know?
Whereas here, the server doesn't care if I live or die, but he's not acting like he does. So it's like,
yeah, there's no fakeness to
yeah,
it.
He's yeah. just like, you want water? Okay, maybe in 15 minutes I'll give you one.
I mean, right, exactly. And also good luck getting water ever in Paris. Is like,
that's fine. And then the second thing we want to go over is menus. So obviously this is very subjective and there's a lot of restaurants that do things differently. But in general, Parisian restaurants are all about seasonal ingredients and also local ingredients. It's like huge here. And you know it's a seasonal thing because it's strawberry season. You're going to see strawberry tart in every fucking menu, which is great because it's like you're eating seasonal stuff. But I find menus or restaurants in general to be more traditional here.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of diversity or innovation, which I think New York is really good at. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's the biggest difference.
Yeah.
Of course, again, there's exceptions to this, but in general.
That's the case.
And then the one thing I do love about the menu situation
is asparagus season? Just kidding.
No, well, yes, I love it.
Have you guys ever been to Paris during white asparagus season?
Well, I love a formule sometimes. So
French,
it's very Parisian. The formule is basically like a 3 or 2 course meal you can pay for. I love a meal for lunch because it's usually a really great deal. You can usually find them for 20 or under 20 euros and you can get a 3-course meal for lunch. And I don't know, I like something that's sitting down and having like 3 courses for lunch. That's like something you never do in New York.
Yeah, first of all, yes, you're right. Never do in New York. Second of all, $20 for 3 courses.
Impossible.
Are you kidding me? In New York? No.
In this economy?
Not even a glass of wine.
There's a place in Belleville called that I love, Paloma. It's 14 euros for a 3-course meal.
Oh, see, that's literal insanity.
That's impossible. Yeah. You would never be able to find that in New York. No, and if you do, it'll be like more like fast foody. This is like a sit-down restaurant.
I don't think you can even get a sandwich for $14 in New York.
Yeah, or a salad.
Yeah, that's, you know? I think my salmon bagel was like 13 or something.
Yeah, I will say where New York wins in this menu battle is I do think menus in New York are normally more creative and innovative. Mm-hmm. And I think menus...
More international too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think menus in France or in Paris more specifically, of course, many exceptions because the food scene...
Evolving.
Is evolving.
You know what's wild? That New York is so good at bagels and so bad at bread.
True.
So or interesting. Like, and it was supposed to be because of the water, but it just...
I don't know what it is because there was one place I would get baguettes from, but baguette was like $6. Oh,
no, but that's it. It's like a pinnacle, what? Like that 4F place. And
I used to get it from the Meat Hook in Williamsburg.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where they got their bread from, but it was really good. But it was 5 or 6 euros. And every time I got it, Paul's like, I'm going to divorce you.
No,
like,
I mean,
he's like, this is insane. We can't pay $5.
You know, today my tradition that I got was 1 euro 30. And I was like, 1 euro 30? Yeah. It's supposed to be 1 euro 20.
Like, when they raise it 10 cents, people are like in the streets. Like, no, but they're like, we're going to overthrow the government.
Yeah, I agree. In the 18th? You kidding me?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I think the other thing. Okay, so the other thing that stood out to me. So I had a little anecdote. I was at this place in Greenpoint, like a trendy natural wine bar.
Of course.
I like natural wine, though it does overlap on kombucha for me. So I think like I'm one of those people that is embarrassing. You know, a waiter comes to the table and they're like, I'm like, I'll have a red. And they're like, something, they're like, quelque chose léger. I mean, light.
Yes. That's
something light. And I'm like, no. I'm like, I want heavy. I want a bold. I want my red wine to taste like meat. I want like a meaty red. So I'm the exception.
But people like that. Like, I'm sure the
old men like that. Yeah. Traditional French people like that. So I like it.
You just
so,
get like a Bordeaux everywhere you go.
Exactly. Yeah. So Bordeaux, Bourgogne. So anyway, so I went to this wine bar and, you know, it's good wine, but it's light. And I go to pay and my friend and I are going to split it. And guess how much the bill was?
A bottle or no,
two
a
glasses.
Glass.
Two glasses.
Two glasses. I would say between 20 to 25 each.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was $49.
I paid $74 for a natural wine
bottle
at a natural wine, natural wine bar in Williamsburg last time I was there. And I was like, hey, I'll get a bottle for the table. I don't know why I did that because I was like, I thought I was in Paris. And then I tell the girl, do you have anything that isn't French? Because I live in France. I would love to, if I'm going to pay crazy prices, at least something interesting that I haven't tried. She goes, no. And I was like, okay, great. Well, what do you have like for orange wine? And she goes, so what's your budget? And again, everything is centered about the money, which again throws me off.
To be fair, they do ask you that question here.
Of course.
But you know what's crazy? When I first started buying wine here, I'd always go, I don't know, like 25, 30. And every time I go like this, whoa, okay. Yeah. Oh, please, you're on the option. Like, it's like immediately it's like this.
Yeah. So yeah, she tells like, me, big what's money your over budget? Here. I was like, I don't know. I don't want to pay more than like $70. And she's like, our cheapest bottle is $74.
Oh my God.
And I was like, well, I guess that's what I'm going to take. I don't even care what it tastes like.
In Paris, $74 for a bottle
that
of wine.
Would,
I mean,
that
you
would
are
be
getting,
insane. That's like a vintage, like special something.
Oh, you're
something.
You're balling out. That's an insane bottle of wine for $74.
I don't think I've ever spent that much money on wine.
No, here, $35 to me is a lot.
Yeah.
When I go to Prince House for dinner, I do 20 to 25 usually for a Prince House.
The most I've spent was I bought a bottle of Ruinart champagne.
Oh, champagne. It's a little diff.
And Ruinart is like a great champagne. And I paid $60, €60 for it. And I think that's the most expensive thing I've ever bought here. Because I was visiting the estate. So I was like, might as well.
No, champagne's diff. I mean, I've obviously spent hundreds on whiskey, as your husband knows my weird whiskey habit.
But whiskey's different because you're not going to down.
You're not
going
to down it in one night.
You know?
Yeah.
Champagne, you open it, you have to drink it. Yeah. Wine, sort of the same. But $74 for a natural and orange wine from fucking France. But then I looked it up and it was €20 here. I was so pissed.
You looked it up and it was 20 here?
I was like, I need to know how much I overpaid for
that.
Can
you tell we've become like insufferable?
I know.
Even this conversation, I'm like, oh my God, we're insufferable.
What living here does to you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the next up, we're going to talk about reservations. So
I feel like they're kind of the same.
I was going to say that. Yeah, I think
both, you know, the biggest
cities
thing
are reservation heavy.
This is so stupid, but you know, in New York, I cannot stand that they don't like. Okay, once again, can I just make a concession for all the waiters out there? Believe me, I've actually never been a waiter. I've worked a lot of retail.
I have not either. I was a hostess for a long time. So I was in the
culture.
Serving-ish. I was in the family, but I was not a waiter.
Yeah. So I do want to acknowledge, like, I know it's a shit job. The
yeah,
same way
it's
that, like,
hard,
Black
for sure.
Friday retail is a shit job. Frankly, I think waiters probably harder and restaurants are probably harder. Yeah. So I do acknowledge this, but I really can't stand that they don't let you sit until your friend's, like, there.
Until your entire party's there.
I kind of understand the logic, but I'm like, if you give me a 2-hour window, just let me sit during that 2-hour window. We'll speed up our food.
Yeah, like not, I'll order for my friends.
I'll order. Literally, I'm the queen of, you know, my whole relationship with being late slash being early. So I'll just recap for you guys because I don't know. This is just like the greatest joy of my life. I used to always be early slash I often am early or very on time. A lot of my friends are often late.
Yeah.
Actually, this has gotten better. But when I first moved here, almost everyone was 20 minutes late.
That's
and I was
a lot.
I know, but I was like so angry. I don't want to be angry anymore.
Well,
so
yeah,
my new thing is angry. I get there. They let me sit. I order a drink and I order an appetizer.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're 20 minutes
late. I feel
late.
Like if you're over 15 or 20 minutes late, then I'm ordering.
I've had friends be 45.
No, I would be like, date is over.
No, but I'm like, I'm going to be 2 drinks in.
Yeah.
So if you don't let me sit, what are you doing?
Reservation wise, I think Paris is a big reservation town. And I think a lot of people don't think that. And so they come here and they show up to a restaurant on a Friday night at 8 p.m. They're like, what do you mean you don't have any tables? So it's just a warning for anyone who's visiting. If you really want to go somewhere that takes reservations, make them. Number one. Number two, I will say the reservation game in Paris is not as cutthroat as New York. I know New York has like a black market for some places.
Did you see they just apparently, there's just some news story.
They had to make it like illegal.
They like shut it down or something.
But that's crazy. Yeah. That there was like a black market because it's like, there was like, I don't know, a handful of restaurants that there was just not enough reservations available. So people would buy them off the black market or some shit like that.
For I'm not surprised by that.
That's insane. Yeah. I don't think, or at least I don't know about it. I don't think that happens in Paris. So
Subteam is hard. There's some places
Yes. But it's like, you can still get a table. Maybe you have to have dinner at 5 p.m., but you can still get tables. Or if you organize yourself and you book it a month in advance, you will get a table. And if not, there's so many great places here. Like you can always find reservations. I don't think it's as cutthroat, but I do think a lot of people think Paris, you're just going to show up and get a table.
I know. Anywhere. I always warn people. No. I always warn people now, make a reservation.
Always make a reservation unless you're okay with rolling up to whichever random like French brasserie.
Yeah. I mean, they really are necessary.
Okay. Well, let's touch on portion sizes. So,
but you know me, I like a big.
I go back and forth. I actually like the idea. So Paris is obviously everything is smaller. Everything's like a small plate. Get a bunch of them, share them with friends. Whereas I think in not just in New York, but generally in the US, portions are bigger. Like,
can we say one caveat here that I just thought of as we're talking? So that's like the trendy restaurants.
Of course.
If you go to an old bistro, you're going to get a giant poulet fermier.
You're going to get
giant,
a huge like, dish.
Yeah.
Yeah. The trendy hipster spots that everybody's like, go visit this place or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think actually in New York is probably the same. A lot of this trendy
but
places.
There's like, you know, all the, there's, oh, what is the place I went to in Queens? Like this Italian place.
Oh, Rollo's?
Yeah, Rollo's. Yeah. The places that are now trendy actually do have
it's
big
more like
portions
traditional,
of lasagna.
Like old school.
Yeah, it's like more old school. Yeah.
I mean, but I think, yeah, in general, people love small dishes here and it's usually like order a bunch so you can try a lot of like different kinds of things from the menu. And I think one thing that outside of food that's really interesting portion wise that's much smaller here than in the US we normally get giant sizes of is water. So
how did I not know where you were going with that?
I this is like one of the main complaints I get from or I hear from Americans. It's like, why do they give you like a shot glass?
Oh, why? First of all, you have to order it four times.
You also have to ask for a carafe d'eau, which is like a fucking not jar, pitcher. But like a pitcher of water, like a jar of water, which is basically the free water. Mm-hmm. If they ask you, do you want natural sparkling? They're going to charge you for
it.
You
know, I made that mistake.
Me too.
Last night.
Like, yeah.
Gab, come on. And what they do they go plat pétillant.
Yeah.
And you're plat pétillant, you go plat. Yeah. And you think that means carafe, but no, plat is a bottle of expensive water.
Yeah. If you explicitly don't say carafe d'eau, they're going to be like,
she said carafe d'eau. But I think water, you know, last night I went to a cocktail bar. Got a shot glass of water.
I went to a very trendy Mexican place on Friday. And this man handed me a literal shot glass. And I was like, well, this is going to be a fun night. I'm going to take shots of water all night.
I know, but like the US, like ice, cup of ice, like a nonstop water. They refill it before you look at your table. It's refilled.
Well, not only is it a giant, like 32 ounce glass, it's filled to the brim with ice, a straw and water like overflowing. Mm-hmm. And anytime you take two sips of that glass,
they're
the
back.
Waiter's filling it up again.
They're back, yeah.
And to me, that's the funniest like difference of like proportions here. Of like, it's not even, I mean, the food, yes, but the water situation is so
different. It's so different. So I was with my sister and we were at this like kind of touristy terrace, but it's a great view. It's right by the sun. And we ordered. The waiter was really nice to us, like roughly 150 years old. It was really nice to us. We split a salad, frisoles, lardons. And then he's like so happy with us. We get our little salad to split, which I thought he'd be mad. He was so happy. Get two glasses of white wine. He's all good. And then we go, excusez-moi, on peut faire un carafe d'eau, s'il vous plaît? He goes, like literally like,
what?
Of
he
course. Like, he was like, he like did this thing
like
where
American,
it's like, he's like, and
water?
There we go. Like you guys were doing so well.
And now
and
you
there
fucked
you
up.
Go.
Yeah.
And it made me realize they really... really judge us for the water.
And then
thing.
Another shocking thing that kind of goes with the water thing is the ice ratio. So here, first of all, no one's ever going to give you ice willingly. You need to ask for it. And even when you ask for it, if you get three
have
cubes,
you even asked for ice? You asked for ice for water or for wine?
No, for like, I don't know, if you want ice.
I never even asked for ice.
Never for water, but like if you get a Coke and you get a glass, if they give you two ice cubes and you're like, can I get like more, they'll give you one ice cube more, and that's like generous.
We have to ration.
Yeah,
I was laughing because my favorite influencer Meredith Wishbone Kitchen, as I've talked about like roughly 4,000 times on this pod, she broke her knee and she just was in Paris and she's like, I did not realize the ice shortage in
the
Paris. She couldn't get ice for her knee.
Is really... It's
a bougie hotel. I'm like, that doesn't surprise me.
But that's the thing. It's such a funny thing how it's like we take it for granted in the U.S. because we just have it available at all times, no matter the month
of
the season.
Ice machine in our fridge. Well, I didn't grow up with that, but...
I think that to me
was luxury.
That is luxury.
That with a cabinet with goldfish and Cheez-Its, that was my dream of my whole life. Parents would only let us have like whole grain Triscuits.
Anyway, if you come to Paris, don't expect
Don't let me talk about my snack trauma.
No, I love that's a different segment in the podcast. But I'm just saying, if you come to Paris, don't expect a lot of water and don't expect a lot of ice, because that's just not what you're gonna get.
But you know what you have to start to expect?
Tipping.
A little tip on your machine.
Thanks, Americans, for ruining this for
That's
us.
Wild. It is wild. You know, it's hard. I feel a little weird talking about it because sometimes I'm like, I don't know what restaurant culture is exactly like working inside. Maybe they really do need that tip. But we are trained in Paris. You tip a tiny bit on a really expensive meal, or if your waiter's really great, a couple euros. But tipping,
like a great tip is €5.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's like, I mean, that's a great tip.
You had like excellent service.
But that's because, for anyone who doesn't know, they make a full salary.
Yeah.
So they have
benefits.
Yeah. So they have, you know, things that waiters in the U.S. don't have.
The salary isn't great, that's for sure. But you still have a lot of things that people in the U.S. don't have, like your five week vacations and all the other benefits. You have universal healthcare. So I'm not saying that they don't need it, but it's not as bad as the U.S., where in the U.S.,
that's a slap
80%
in the US
of your paycheck comes from tips.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here, that's not the case. Yeah. And tipping wasn't even a thing until, like, I would say a couple of years ago.
It definitely wasn't when I moved here. I moved here 5 years ago. So
and,
I would say,
and again, like Abby said, like, if you had excellent service somewhere, you would leave the guy €5 if it's, like, incredible. Right. €10 if it's, like, this is the best service I've had in my life. Yes. And you're spending, like, €100. So it's, like, not even 10%.
I know.
But now, because of all the Americans that have moved here and because obviously a lot of the American tourists that come here and tip anyway, a lot of the restaurants, and specifically in like the very trendy touristy areas, but also like the coffee shops, the hipster places, have now implemented tipping in their system. So now when you're going to go pay, you get a little pop-up that says, do you want to leave 10, 15, or
20%? What do you do? Have you a rule for yourself yet?
Yes. So if I get excellent service, sure, maybe 10%. If I don't get good service, I pretend I'm French and I just reject it.
You know, sometimes the waiters, which I like really respect, the waiters here will just exit out before they give it to you.
Me and Paul were talking about this. So we have a theory that that happens if they hear you, if you're in a group with mostly French people or only French speakers. If you're in a group of people who are speaking English, they'll leave it. That's my theory.
Whoa.
Because
can you guys do that? Try that and report back to us. I'm so curious.
Because Paul's like, Paul was telling me like it never happens to him when he's by himself because he speaks French.
Okay, that is wild.
And they can tell
so they
he's
can
French.
Spot me from a fucking mile away.
All any of us are like these fucking Americans. Let's put up the tip. Let's put up the tip for them.
They're like, they ask for ice.
Our group
out.
Of friends is mainly Americans, Canadians, like English speakers. So when we all got, we're like a group of 10 fucking loud ass
from across the street.
Anglophones are like, ugh. This is gonna make our night. Throw up the tip. So
you know what we didn't talk about, which I realized is not on our list.
What?
Noise levels.
Oh, this is very you.
That is actually
this is very yeah.
Wait, why? Because I'm autistic. Sorry, no. I'm like actually not joking about that.
No,
I'm pretty
know,
sure I'm
no,
on the spectrum.
I know. Okay, not noise levels in general, but I know vibe is a big thing for you.
Oh, vibe.
The
well,
vibe.
Yes, but
lighting,
I think
all that stuff.
Yes, but the okay. So start. Let me just go on my two minute rant. Start the timer.
About
just kidding.
Vibing.
About all of this. Okay. But okay. So the noise levels in New York are out of control.
Agreed.
They also, and not just New York, it's Wisconsin. Wisconsin's actually worse. Like there will be someone with a, oh my God, there will be someone with a sharp laugh in Wisconsin. Like it'll like resonate throughout the room. People are screaming.
I do know when we all go out and we're like a group of more than five English speakers.
Yeah, it picks up.
We are loud.
But you know what? I like don't blame myself so much for that because I'm a mumbler.
I mean, I don't care.
Like, I don't know. It's just like, I don't think that I'm, well, we'll see. I'm not taking so much of the blame for the noise levels.
I don't think it's, I don't, okay. French people when they're drunk are loud as fuck and they're obnoxious. So I'm like, I don't
this
care.
This is true.
Yes. So I'm like, don't tell me that I am loud because I'm American.
But for some reason in restaurants.
That's true. They talk, they're very like.
They like whisper. Like you walk into a French restaurant, you're like, is anyone having a conversation here? It's so
they're whispering.
Weird.
Sweet nothing.
They're whispering. Yeah. And so I will say though, it's like really nice when you want to have like an intimate, I mean, talking about dating.
Were you at that Mexican place where we almost got kicked out?
Yes. Yeah. I've almost got kicked out of multiple restaurants, but I,
to
you
be
know
fair,
what?
It was a Mexican place that served frozen margaritas.
In
what
a
did they
picture.
Expect?
Yeah. What are you going to do? Shitty fajitas, it's frozen margaritas. Loud. You know who you are attracting.
Yeah. It's called fajitas. It's
yeah, exactly.
You're not going there for a quiet meal.
No.
So anyway.
Whatever.
But okay, I think noise levels,
I actually like the noise levels in Paris, though granted I feel a little like I stand out. But I can talk quietly. You guys can't tell from the pod, but to be fair, I've actually been told my noise levels are low. Which is why I've been licking the microphone.
I don't care if I'm loud, if I'm having a good time. Like, we're in public. Who cares?
Agreed. Also, I think Paris has a vibe problem, which is crazy.
Paris has a vibe problem. I see that as like the headline from like
memoir or something.
The Cut or something.
I think the restaurants, okay, this is not the old school restaurants. I think the old school restaurants have a great
better
vibe.
Yeah, I agree.
Wooden, stone. I love those like Normandy ceilings with like those wooden planks or whatever. I love that stuff. Bistros, brasseries, totally fine. The trendy restaurants are struggling on the vibe. Why are there bright lights everywhere? The most uncomfortable seating you've ever experienced. Oh my, everything is metal. Everything is like blue light. It's so weird.
Give me color. Give me texture.
Sometimes they don't even have music playing. I'm like, what are you guys doing? I don't get it. I'm totally confused. New York has nailed the vibes a lot more. But because I think in New York, everyone's trying to have sex. Like, actually, I guess Paris, maybe they're trying to do that too. I don't really know.
But
New
I think the people that want to have sex go to a bistro or go to like a brasserie.
What?
I mean, that's...
No, you think so? Is that how you're going to more bistro brasseries?
I think it's sexier than there than like a trendy...
You mean like a couple on a date that wants to have sex?
Like, I think you're going to see like a French couple making out in a corner and like a old school bistro over than like a hipster natural wine bar in the 11th, you know?
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe I just don't go out enough to...
I don't know. You can do a makeout trial and report back. Let us know. But anyway, it drives me crazy. So I think noise level / vibe... I bet you I'm going to get people who disagree with me on this. And I think it's just because we probably frequent different places. But
I do think Paris has a coziness problem. But I'll talk about this later.
Oh, yeah.
So I agree with you on that.
100%. You have a rant on it.
Yeah. Okay. So the other thing that's very different is dining hours, which is, again, something that if you haven't lived there or if you don't frequent Paris, you wouldn't know. But we talked about this in an earlier pod, how the French have very strict eating hours. So basically they won't eat after certain times. Same thing goes for restaurants. A lot of restaurants will close between lunch and dinner.
There is no worse nightmare than being trapped in Paris between 3 to 5 p.m.
yeah, you're gonna starving. Have to eat McDonald's basically. Mm-hmm. And so just keep that in mind when you come here after the lunch rush, which is
actually
2 to 3.
We can tell people to look for a service continu.
Yes,
that's something to look for.
I don't know if you've eaten,
they change
hours.
The menu.
No, the food isn't that good.
Yeah, fair.
It feels like reheated, which is like, it's fine, but it's not like, it doesn't feel fresh.
Right.
At least that's happened to me.
Yeah.
So basically anything after 3 p.m. is going to be either shitty or closed. So, which is something that I feel like in New York, obviously some restaurants also have the same thing, but a lot, you can pretty much eat anything at any time in New York, 24 hours. Also, I think restaurants here close earlier. I think late night food in Paris is not as diverse as New York. Hmm. It's like kebabs and McDo. Like, there's really not that much variety. So I do think dining hours in New York, you can eat most things at any hour.
You can also order.
You can order.
Most things at any hour. Like, you can really order anything. If you go on, the other night it was 3 a.m. and I was starving and I went on, there's Pizza Hut and like almost nothing else.
Yeah.
Like, truly, there's nothing to order.
But that's
at 3
what I'm saying.
Here.
For me, it's always like, like you get home drunk and it's like 2 a.m. You're like, I'm starving.
I have
a
drunk pasta box that I pull from. I pulled from it Friday night, and I just keep it there in my closet.
For me, it's always like a kebab or McDonald's.
Yeah.
And so there's not a lot of
I did
options.
Burger King the other day.
And?
It's fine.
Does it hold up?
Yeah, I mean, it's chicken nuggets. It's like ground up chicken beak. So kind of the same across the board.
But anyway, and then like to kind of close it, I mean, there's two more things we want to touch on, but the dining experience, which we already kind of talked about, but we talked about how you can really nurse a drink. You can sit in a terrace. You don't have to spend money. They're not going to check in on you for 5 minutes. So that's like the biggest thing.
That is luxury.
But also on the, if you're going to look at the negative of it, this is something that I tell also my friends who come visit. There's no such thing as a quick lunch here unless you're doing takeout. Mm. This happened to me every time I had my lunch hour during work and a friend was visiting. I'm like, let's have a quick lunch. That's at least an hour. Not because of anything, but they take their sweet ass time and they're not in a rush.
Serving you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I counted it. I went to a brasserie by my old apartment. I was like, I have an hour. That should be enough. An hour and a half was my lunch. So just keep that in mind if you're in a rush. Paris is not the place to be in a rush.
No.
And if you're
Paris
in a rush,
is not the place to be in a rush. Yeah, exactly.
Take out. Don't even, or go to like, you know, not the fast food, but yeah, get L&D's. Go somewhere. Yeah, L&D's. Somewhere where you don't have to wait around. But if you're going to get service at a restaurant, it's never going to be quick. Sometimes you might be surprised and it is, but just in general, it's not the case. Mm-hmm. And then closing it all out, which is, I think, something we kind of talked about at the beginning of this. I think the biggest difference between Paris and New York is truly the price. And you kind of mentioned this when you came back from New York. You said, I feel like no one has money to do anything anymore in New York.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
And I think I just feel like that what you're paying is so disproportionate from the experience you're having.
Yeah.
I think I don't know. I don't know how you feel, Danny, but like when I travel, like you go to Italy, you go to like a random hole in the wall restaurant, you have the best gnocchi, the best peachy pasta, whatever the hell, of your life. Yeah. And then you go to New York and you spend $75 for like two bowls of pasta.
And natural wine.
It's just, yeah, I mean, exactly. And I just, it doesn't match up. It's
with
kind of
quality.
Yeah. It's just kind of, to me, it's like the experience of waiting in line for 2 hours for something which diminishes the quality of it.
Of course.
It's the same thing. It's just paying $250 for, and I'm not even kidding, it was like a bowl of mozzarella sticks, a Caesar salad, and I don't even remember, but something that was like very American. And it's just spending that much money. It's just, nothing is that good. Nothing is worth that price.
I agree. And I think that's something we talk about a lot. Like when you live in Paris, obviously there's expensive restaurants too, but the everyday routine of going out and having a drink with friends or having lunch or trying this bakery, you can be broke and you can be on a budget and you can still enjoy these parts of your life of let's go get a drink. Let's go get a, let's go to the wine bar.
A glass of wine could be 4 or 5 euros.
Yeah. If you drink like the house wine, I think it was in a Bouillon Pigalle, we got like a magnum bottle for like 15 euros. Yeah. Obviously, it's the shittiest wine you're going to drink, but who cares? You're with friends. You're
also,
just having...
it's shitty wine in France, which means it's actually not that shitty. Yeah, that's probably $50 in New York.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, obviously, there's things that are expensive here. I'm not saying there aren't, but you have so many choices. Like, I was really shocked about, I saw an infatuation campaign they did with like Chase, I think it was, about how the
Chase
average...
owns them.
Oh, well, that makes sense. But they did a whole thing for Valentine's about how the average date night in New York costs $200. Mm. So dinner for two...
I'm actually
two,
surprised it's not more.
Yes.
To be honest.
Same,
if you
but
drink,
also,
I'm surprised
but then
it's not
when
more.
I compared it to what me and Paul spend when we go to dinner, I can't remember the last time we spent 200 euros.
I know. Well, that would be... Michelin
menu. Yeah,
Michelin.
And even that... I was trying to think the last time we did that... And I think we got a menu, like a Michelin star or whatever, and it was like a 90 euro per person.
Yeah. If that would be Michelin plus drinking, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 But I'm like, $200 for... And then, so their whole campaign was like, we can do it for cheaper. And so they went to a diner and had hamburgers and they still spent $112.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised by the diner thing either.
And I'm like, okay, again, I love a diner. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But the fact that you go to on your date night to a diner to have hamburgers
still
and you
over
spend $112.
But have you seen that? Like, there's like, it's like the New York Happy or the New York Happy Meal. Is that what they called? McDonald's? Why am I having
Yeah, Happy Meal.
Aneurysm? Yeah. So it's like a New York Happy Meal. It's like fries. It's like a fries, Caesar salad, and a martini. The martini is like a little baby. And then I saw the Caesar salad. It's like four leaves of lettuce.
No.
Girl, if I want a Caesar salad, I want a Caesar
salad.
I want a bowl
of lettuce.
I want a giant. I want it packed in there. That's insane to me. I will offer that one other, like, I have one hesitation around this, which I've been told a million times, where I'm like, Paris is so cheap. It's not cheap for French people in other places.
Compared to New York.
It's not cheap to Spanish people. It's not cheap to people who live in other regions.
Yes.
It is cheap compared to New York.
Compared
and
to New York.
I think cheap compared to London.
Yes.
So these are
I
like
agree.
my but I want to say, like,
but
for anyone
I do
who lives
think
in like Bordeaux or whatever.
The options to maybe you're not gonna eat at the trendiest, more like the hipster, cool, new, trendy places, but you can still go to a brasserie or a bistro or something more low key and have like a good meal for 25 euros.
Yeah.
You know, like there are options here. And of course there are options in New York too. You can go to Chinatown and have an incredible meal and spend $25. Like, for sure that exists. But in general, the act of meeting up with friends, having a few drinks, it's not going to bankrupt you, or you don't have to be like, oh, I already had brunch this month, I can't do that. Here, I think there's more possibilities to enjoy the dining experience because it's not all centered around money.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think in New York, it's become the main focus is how much money can we make? How much money can we spend? And then it takes the magic away from the dining experience.
Yeah.
And like you said, you're not getting, it's not like you're getting superior service or superior products necessarily. It's just everything has gotten so out of control expensive that people are just trying to survive. And in turn, people are not going out because they're like, I got to pay rent. I can't have martinis tonight.
I mean, this is my whole other conversation that we'll have on another episode of the podcast. But like, why I think New York is getting more boring.
I agree.
I just think people are boring.
It's lost its magic.
Yeah.
And it's not, I'm not saying that because I don't live there anymore. But I feel like after COVID, a lot of the people that, and a lot of the businesses and a lot of the stores and restaurants that gave it that quirkiness and magic and like...
Yeah. And spontaneity.
Yes.
Like, you used to be able to be spontaneous. It's funny because I actually didn't... Everyone was like, right after COVID, honestly, I went back like 5 times. I had an amazing time. I loved it. This last time, I'm like, it has fully spiraled.
Yeah.
It has spiraled. So anyway...
It's only gotten worse.
Yeah. That's our convo for another pod.
And okay, so if you had to pick, what's the good and the bad, or which one would you pick?
It's as hard. Like right now,
the better city for a food experience.
Well, right now, I'll be honest, I prefer the variety of food in New York.
Okay.
But the stress and discomfort and anxiety it makes me feel to eat out, I would pick eating out here, delivery New York.
Oh, that's a great compromise. I actually like that. Yeah, that's cool. I like that. Yeah.
All right. Time for our segment. How do you not know this?
Huh? So we're each bringing something in culture that we're obsessed with, and we're going to teach each other what that thing is about. So today, have you ever heard, are you familiar of with Reddit, but more specifically Reddit Snark?
I've very loosely heard of this, but I'm going to need a massive education here.
So The Cut recently wrote an article about this, which was super fascinating because they interviewed some of these editors that run these Snark pages. So
do they call themselves editors?
Well, Redditors, whatever. Redditors.
Oh, interesting.
No. Okay. Actually, I have no idea what they call themselves, but essentially Reddit has these subreddits called Snark, and they have them all over. So there's the New York influencer one. There's the LA influencer one. There's actually two dedicated to two big influencers in Paris that I've only seen one, but I've heard of the other. And they are wild. So essentially, it's a subreddit dedicated to people talking shit about influencers.
Oof.
And, you know, sometimes you're like, whatever, some of these influencers are insufferable, but the detail in which they talk about these people, I'm like, who has the time?
Oh.
Well, I don't know if they're friends. I mean, some of them, I mean, the one I've seen about the Paris one, I'm like, this person knows this girl. Because some of the things they talk about, I'm like, it's just very creepy. And if I were one of the influencers targeted by these subreddits, I would be like, should I get a restraining order?
Do you think you would be flattered or horrified?
I think I would be horrified. I would quit the internet if someone had... Basically, they update them daily. And what they talk shit. Basically, anytime any of these influencers post, they dissect every single thing they post, how they're talking to camera, who's in the background, what is the person wearing, do they have a double chin, like anything you can think. Yes, it's crazy.
My nightmare.
And it's just kind of sad because, again, I understand that people like to talk shit about influencers. It's like kind of comes with the territory, right? But to dedicate all this time and effort into creating a community, because they have at least, I think they were saying like...
That's like their bonding.
At least the New York influencer one, I think has...
Who's on the New York influencer?
I haven't checked it in a while. I know there was one with...
Daniel Bernstein?
I don't think so. Really? No. Okay. I mean, at least the one I saw, but 145,000 people look at these. At least the New York one.
I mean, but it's kind of before when you were saying like, is Bon Appetit or Wishbone Kitchen bigger? I'm like, who's causing more of a conversation on the internet? Bon App when they had a scandal, but Wishbone Kitchen now.
Well, so basically what the Cut did is, and we'll link the article so you can read it. They interviewed
We'll promote toxic gossip for
so
you guys.
So what I like about the Cut is that they went and they talked to the people who run these subreddits.
That's cool. How do you think they got in touch? Like, did the people remain anonymous?
I think there's some sort of, I'm sure there's like some way to contact them through Reddit or like some sort of email address or something. I think a lot of them have obviously like a username that's not their name.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But basically they went out and asked these people like, why do you do this? Because it's deranged, right? Again, the two influencers that are being targeted in the Paris one are not necessarily my favorite people in the world. Like I'm not their audience, but I would never... In a million, like I've never.
Danny's starting shit on the pod.
What I'm saying is, I'm not necessarily like their audience or someone who's like, love you, girl. But I would I would never be like, did you see her double chin in the last story? Yeah. Like, that's such an insane thing to do.
Well, that's cruel. I also don't love comments on people's physical appearance.
They comment on everything, Gabby. Cruel. It's really crazy. There's like a million conspiracy theories. Did you see this? That means this. Did you see that? That means that. And it's just like...
People think he's like, people have... I want to know who's on the New York one. Oh, I'll get up.
We can check later. Yeah. But yeah, but they're deranged, first of all. If I was the influencer...
Well, it's like a hobby.
I would feel like shit. Yeah, it's like a hobby. Yeah. There's communities. So it's not just one moderator. There's like... dozens of them and people commenting. So every time they're like, what do you think about her outfit? She looks like shit. And then like 20 people are like, yeah, she looks like shit. And it's like, what the fuck is
like, what do you get out of it? That's what I want to know.
So basically they interviewed all these people. It's people from like all different like cities, walks of life, ages. And it's very interesting because I feel like the common denominator is like they're a little bit jealous in some way. So one of them was like, I know how much they make because I work in marketing and it makes me sick. Basically saying like influencers make too much money. Another one said like, I don't think influencing is an actual job. So that's why I bully them,
right,
I guess.
Yeah.
So one of them was like, this is how I keep up with gossip, essentially. One of them was like a stay-at-home mom that has three kids. And she, I guess, in between the lines, she's like, I'm bored, essentially.
Yeah.
And so to me, a lot of these people, like, I kind of understand to an extent what they're saying, but I'm like, that sounds like a you problem. Like, you
it
need
sounds
to
like
go to
something
therapy.
Like when you notice it about yourself. Like, by the way, I think we all have these emotions. Yeah. You go to therapy, or guess what you do? You start
the
a podcast.
The only one that I sort of was like, I sort of get it, but it's still kind of crazy. It's like, one of them was like, oh, I met my favorite influencer in real life and she was a bitch to me.
No, okay, I get that. It's a horrible. Did you see there's like a whole thing happening on TikTok because of this? Like, this
is
one girl met.
A thing?
I mean, I think this is the thing that happens a lot, but there's this one girl, I'm not going to say her name, but she's like kind of short hair fashion girl. And she, like, an influencer approached her on the street when she was filming a video of herself. And it was like, made some like joke comment, like, okay, cutie, go off. But like in a way that were like really condescending,
like,
way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she like ranted about it. And then all these other influencers, like Teffy, got involved and like made a comment. And, you know, I first of all felt better that like everyone gets treated like shit by everyone else. Like, it's not just people who have social standing, but.
Yeah, I mean, I
get how that's hurtful.
I get how, I get that too. But at the same time, I'm like, just because, listen, I met so many influencers in the course of my career because I've worked in social.
And you didn't become a Redditor, a snark.
I did not start a snark about anyone. And I still think that's a deranged thing to do. But my whole thing is like, it's like meeting a celebrity. Like, they don't really owe you anything.
I agree.
It should be nice. It should be a nice, like, people should be nice in general. You shouldn't turn into, like, that shouldn't be your villain
origin story.
Like, that shouldn't be the reason why you become, like,
also imagine how hard it is. Okay, I don't know if you haven't, like, you've run into this, but when I was first posting TikToks in Paris, I got approached all the time.
Oh, no, that never happened to me.
Oh, it's just so crazy because it was such a small world. And I just, like, all the time on the subway and restaurants. It happened while I was with my family one time and it was mortifying. They were like, who are you, fucking idiot, like, posting your face online? And I got to this point where I can't imagine being actually popular and famous because you just must have to be on all the time.
Yes.
Like, imagine the days I snap at people in the street. Like,
well,
just, it's hard. It's probably
the
really
other
hard.
Thing that people don't realize, because I've met a lot of influencers that are very outgoing and outspoken on social, and then you meet them in real life and they're actually super shy.
Yep.
I think a lot of people don't realize that that's a persona they put on for the internet, and they're not actually that way in real life. Mm-hmm. And so when they kind of meet the person and maybe they're like a little more introverted or like shy or maybe not
they
as
take
nice
that, like,
and bubbly,
personally, probably
they
too.
Take that as, yeah, like it's an attack. And I think a lot of internet personalities, especially people who have been doing it for like so many years, they're not the same person online and offline. That doesn't mean that's a bad thing or they're not genuine. That just means they put on a little bit of a persona, a little bit of a show to entertain their followers. And that's comfortable because they're looking at a camera. They're not looking at an audience. Mm-hmm. And when they're in public and someone approaches them, that might throw them off because they're just not the most social or outgoing. They're more like extroverted.
Do you think this is a problem, or do you think this is just natural in terms of how people show up in spaces?
I think it's like there's a chance they're gonna be nice and you hit it off and maybe you'll can make a friend, and there's a chance they're gonna be assholes. And I don't think that should radicalize you to create a snark page about them. That's what I think. People are people. People can be nice. People can be mean. Don't expect anything from them because, like I said, they're not, they don't really owe you anything. Of course, if you're like a, if you're a loyal follower, it'll be nice to meet them and they're nice to you. I agree. But if they're not what you expected, I mean, I think that happens with celebrities all the time.
Oh my God. Yeah.
You never want to meet your heroes. Mm-hmm. And I think you just have to get over it. But I think
someday
in general,
we're
going to
talk about your story of when you hung out with the Jonas Brothers for a night.
Oh my God. I did sign an NDA. So
no way. Really?
I did.
Oh, so can I even say that?
Yeah, you can say it. It's fine. Okay. I mean, they're not going to track me. Nothing happened. I don't have any gossip. They were actually super nice. But yeah, it was an interesting night. Anyway, what's yours?
Oh my gosh. Not as interesting as yours. Do you follow Gabby Windy? I don't know if it's Windy or Windy.
I don't know, but I just looked her up and I kind of vaguely know who she is because she's on Traitors this season.
Okay, once again, true form, I literally have not watched anything she's on. So I haven't watched The Bachelor and I haven't watched Traitors.
But she has like a podcast?
Don't even know that YouTube? Either. I just see clips
of
her.
How is she? Yeah, where are the clips
There's
from?
Clips on her TikTok. She started popping up on my TikTok. I was like, who is this? She's a lesbian.
Okay.
So then I was kind of confused. I was like, how are you on The Bachelor? Do they have Lesbian Bachelor? I'm not sure. I can't watch The Bachelor. I get too bad secondhand embarrassment.
Was she The Bachelor?
Yes. I think there was two.
Is she a lesbian or bi?
So she, like, people asked her how the Bachelor went, and she was like, "Well, I'm a lesbian now." So I kind of like think she was maybe exploring.
So she wasn't out.
I thought there was like two. Oh my god, I've literally making out with this microphone. I thought there was like two Bachelors. You know what? I'm not even gonna comment because I don't actually know the answer. I am just obsessed with her energy. I think I'm not alone. Obviously, The Cut just did an article on her.
Love her.
Everyone's obsessed with her. Evan Ross Katz just had this like devoted post to her, but. Okay, so I have this mission this year, which we've talked about, which is just to own my weirdness and confidence and thoughts and just say the stuff I want to say this year. You know, I just feel like, I don't know, like being a woman in the world.
Yeah.
Being intimidated by men. I also like grew up in the Midwest, which is like self-deprecating. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I just have always been someone who's like every thought I have is stupid. Every feeling I have is stupid. And I watch her. And first of all, we share a name. We share a spelling. I mean, that's tangential, but, and I just, she's so weird and she expresses funny. Every thought in her head and so she articulates, her voice is so interesting. She kind of gives like Jennifer Coolidge, but like a young Jennifer Coolidge.
She kind of looks like ditzy, but then she says something, you're like, oh, she's actually funny.
She clearly like is funny and like thinks about things and she says like really perceptive things, but in a very funny way. And she's just inspiring me to
say,
I don't know, lean into who I am more.
Yeah,
you know,
you should.
And I really like her, and I feel like this like warmth from her that I love, and I just
people love her.
Yeah, I mean, I get it though. She's just,
I've only seen a few clips, and I thought she was funny. Like, she gave me that same impression. Like, I was like, who is this girl? She kind of came off a little bit like airheaded, ditzy.
Yes.
But then when I actually finished the clip, I'm like, that was actually really funny.
Yes.
So it's just really interesting. It gives me like a more elevated Paris Hilton vibe.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's kind of Nicole.
Richie?
Yeah.
It's
kind of Nicole Richie vibes in.
True. I find her hilarious. Like, I think Nicole Richie,
they're
so
both
funny.
Very smart. Smart.
Yeah.
So they both like play dumb, I think.
I find her funnier than Paris, but I still like appreciate what Paris had to bring. Like,
I think she was Paris's enabler from what I saw.
She was Paris's enabler.
Like, she enabled her to like be kind of,
I think,
like
them
that.
Together were a great match.
We should rewatch that.
I know we should.
Yeah. And we're back for our final segment.
Snack and Spiral. Spiral and snack.
Danny, what are you snacking on?
So my snack is a little more of a dessert, but can also snack on it. And it's from one of my favorite places in France. It's a place called Picard, and it's a frozen.
This is trending, by the way.
Is it?
I'm gonna find you guys the article and link it in the show notes.
Yeah, it's a supermarket, a grocery store, but everything is frozen. And
is it cold inside?
No, not really. Everything's like in cooler.
I'm kind of picturing
like normal.
I'm kind of picturing like kind of like there's snow.
Have
everywhere.
You been to Picard?
I've looked. I don't have a free. I have like a freezer that's the size of like a brick.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Well, they have like everything. It's an incredible place. Everything is really good. Honestly, I've tried a lot of their things. They also have themed weeks throughout the year. They have American Week, which is super funny.
We can probably link our friends.
Yeah, Sarah, our friend Sarah does. Yeah. She basically reviews it every year. It's really funny because I don't really think French people know what American food is, but it's really funny every year. They also have Latin Week, which is actually pretty solid. They do like empanadas and yuca fries and stuff like that. Everything
they do
frozen.
Yuca fries?
Yes, they do yuca
fries.
What
the hell?
Yeah, and then they just recently had like Indian Week, and they had like frozen naans and stuff like that. So again, the variety is really good. They have they had like Mediterranean Week a few weeks ago, which is like mainly like. They had a lot of like Italian frozen things. They have a lot of frozen like soups and sauces that are really good for when you're like, I don't know what to cook today. Just pop them out from the freezer and just use it. But my favorite thing they do is their desserts, specifically the mini cones, which is something that if you live in the US and you have a Trader Joe's in your city, you probably are familiar with the Trader Joe's mini cones.
Well, so I do have lived in the US, have had Trader Joe's in my cities, and today is the first time hearing about these.
They're pretty big, at least in my community.
What's the most you've ever eaten in one sitting?
Oh, I can eat like four or five.
Okay.
Or like the entire thing, which is like eight.
Yeah,
or
me
something.
Too. Okay. That was a test and you passed.
Oh, no. No shame. But basically, they sell a very similar... It's virtually the same thing. And it just kind of... When I saw them in Picard, I was like, is this what I think it is? And that's why I had it. And it's like basically
Does it
the
taste
same
the same?
Thing. It's not exactly, but pretty much. Like, okay. It's the same... The same kind of, it's basically like a mini cone with the little triangle end of the cone is filled with chocolate. Then
the
ice cream is vanilla and it's covered in chocolate. So it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
They don't taste 100% the same, but it's pretty much the same thing.
Okay. But does it taste more natural?
I can't remember. If I'm being completely honest with you, I can't remember.
Let's do a side by side. How are you ever going to get the frozen ones back?
I'm never going to get that from Trader Joe's. It's going to melt. But anyway, it's a good, if you're missing that from Trader Joe's, or if you want to try it out, I highly recommend it. There are mini cones from Picard. They have chocolate version and they have vanilla version.
They have vanilla. Does the vanilla have white chocolate?
The vanilla is the one I had. The chocolate is chocolate
ice cream.
Okay, chocolate ice cream.
I want a white. I am a controversial figure in the sense that I actually love white chocolate. And don't tell me it's not real chocolate. I don't care. I think it's delicious. So I would, I can implore anyone out there, food innovators,
Picard,
create a Picard. Picard. Is it Picard or Picard?
I call it Picard. Oh, I never know because the other day I called, Picard. You know the store Normal? I called it Normal. And Tara, our friend, was like, what's Normal?
Really?
Yes. I was like, well, I'm sorry.
Excuse me. I'm integrated into French culture.
Yeah, but it's spelled Picard.
Okay.
It's Picard, I guess. Pronounce the D like everything in France. But it's a great, great supermarket if you're ever around.
And who do you hate / want to rant about /
I want to rant about the coffee shop epidemic.
Oh, no.
It's specifically because, there's a fucking coffee shop popping up every 5 minutes in Paris.
Why is it happening? Because of immigration?
Are we the problem? Are we the problem? I do think coffee or to-go coffee is becoming a thing here more, or data coffee shops are becoming a thing here more. So I think that's probably it. But also I think coffee shops are not that expensive to run because I don't think coffee is that expensive. And I might be completely wrong, but that's
what coffee prices are going up. I know this because I had a coffee client.
Oh, really? Well, that's what I've heard.
But maybe comparatively.
Comparative to a restaurant, right, I think running a coffee shop, it's the overhead is not that crazy.
Sure.
However, all the coffee shops that are popping up in Paris have a huge issue. Number one is a lot of the times the coffee is not good. And a lot of the
times... I wouldn't know I'm trash, but I trust you on that.
Well, it's not that I'm like a con... Like, I don't know that much about coffee either. I drink latte, so it's not like I'm drinking filtered coffee. But it's not good, the coffee. It's expensive as fuck, New York prices. Like, the other day I paid $6.50 for a chai, and I'm like, what is this?
It seems so normal to me, but it just must be.
I feel like that's a lot of money. I mean, maybe I'm like out of touch or something, but I just thought it was super expensive. And then the last problem is there's no fucking seating anywhere. Yeah. There's no cozy spots.
Little circle chairs that your butt doesn't even fit on.
Flat, wooden stools that you sit for 30 minutes and your ass is hurting.
Killing you. Back is killing you.
You can't have a work session there because you're going to be so uncomfortable because there's no, it's just not a good cozy setup for, if you want to read a book or if you want to sit outside.
Do you think, I didn't think about this till now, but do you think it's hostile design, cities will design so that homeless people can't sleep on the furniture? Yeah. Do you think they're doing that so that we don't come with our laptops?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I do think that for them, they don't want you to set up shop
with your laptop.
Because
they don't make money when we're all sitting there, I guess.
Yeah, but then I'm like, but if I'm there reading a book or if I bring my laptop to answer emails or whatever, I'm there 2-3 hours, I'm probably going to get a pastry and a coffee.
Same.
And then maybe, so I'm going to spend more money than I would. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to get something.
Also, people can still come in, come and go.
Well, and that's the thing. Now that I'm freelancing, I work from home, but sometimes I'm I just want to be outside, especially now that the weather's getting nice. Yeah. It's sunny in Paris. You want to be outside. And so I'm let's meet at this coffee shop. And there's never seating. If there's seating, it's super uncomfortable. So you have a meeting for an hour and you're ready to come home. And so I think the problem is, it's not that they're popping up everywhere because whatever, more coffee shops, that's not an issue. Is that the coffee isn't good, the product isn't good, it's expensive, and there's no coziness. You don't want to stick around. You don't want to hang out. You don't want to tell your friends, hey, let's have a coffee and talk about life for 3 hours.
No, it feels like you're always on your toes, ready to go. Yeah. You're not ready, you're not settled.
And everything is a countertop. So you have to stand or you have to sit in a stool. And when a person leaves, everybody's fighting over that one stool, So it's so I just want coffee shop people to create cozy spaces.
Yeah. Can I pitch you an idea?
Sure.
What do you think about, I love terrasse culture. If you don't know. Everyone who lives in Paris, I realize I call it the terrasse and everyone's what the hell are you talking about? Terrace.
It's outdoor.
Yes. Seating. It's an outdoor seating, but it's a culture of every brasserie here, everywhere has it. Even Tabac kind of have sometimes places to sit outside. Tabac is where you get an espresso at the bar or whatever. My pitch is a terrasse. With a good a good coffee shop with a terrasse.
Yes.
Why can't you merge the best of French culture, which is lounge at a terrasse, with
good
the
products.
Best of American Australian culture, which is actually good coffee shops or / Italian culture or whatever. But I don't know why you can't merge the two.
Yeah, I don't understand. There's some places that have come sort of close, KB. And then but even there, I mean, their coffee is good, I will say. Very expensive. The chai there I think is €7. Mm. Very good chai. The ice one. I don't know what the hot one. Their pastry game, however, is weak.
Really?
And then when you bring a fucking croissant or like something from somewhere else.
They don't
like
you?
No. They're like, you can't eat it here.
No way. Really?
That happened to an American couple. The other day I was sitting there reading my book, minding my business, having my chai. And there was an American couple that came and they had kids and they had bought, you can tell they had bought croissants from the boulangerie next door. And then the little kids were like, okay, let's eat. And then the guy came and was like, you can't eat that here.
Or you in the outdoor seating?
Outside.
Oh, that's chaos.
And
that's
they stupid. Told them either you need to leave. Like, do you want me to put your coffee to go? And they were like rightfully annoyed, but they respected it. So they put their croissants away. But then I'm like, why the fuck do you not sell croissants anymore?
Oh, they don't sell croissants?
No, they sell like banana bread and they sell like scones. Again, some of it is good. But yeah, sometimes I go there and I'm like, I don't really want to have dessert here because it's not the best of the best.
Yeah.
I'm just imploring... If there's a new coffee shop popping up in the 9th or anywhere
in Paris,
do
better.
Just give me seating, give me good pastries, give me good coffee.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm saying.
Bada bing, bada boom.
What's your snack?
Oh my God. My snack is really indulgent this week. My snack is a piece of bread, a lot of butter, like a thick layer of butter, demi-sel, that means partly salted. Could be fully salted if you want to go crazy. And then a layer of Conte. Conte is...
That's like the Frenchest thing I've heard.
Oh my God. The first guy I ever slept with here taught it to me. And it's the biggest thing I've taken from that quote unquote relationship is that one combo. Because I didn't know you could mix butter with cheese.
Yes.
Which is crazy because I'm from Wisconsin. So like you would have think we would have mixed in all the dairy.
My people's culture.
Oh my God. It's incredible. I made Danny try it.
It was really good. I really liked it. I mean, butter and cheese.
I know. I think it's probably really hard not to like, but yeah, I love it. Yeah. So anyway, that's my snack. I actually have it quite often when I feel like I have nothing in my fridge and I need something super quickly. I live across from a fromagerie and I go to the
I forget boulangerie. How much I like comté cheese sometimes have it and I'm like, fuck, I should eat this more.
And I'll recommend, I love a 15 plus month aged. You can go up to almost 40. I think 36 might be the
when they like
oldest I've had.
They get, they're so aged. They become even like spicy. They like
crystallize. Usually at Carrefour or Franprix you can get up to 15 months, and if you go to the fromagerie you can get much older. Today we had 15 months.
It's really good.
You tried, which is pretty good. In terms of
what are you ranting about?
Oh my God, what aren't I ranting about
spiraling
these days? This one's shout out to my friend whose name starts with a J. I told her that I'd leave her anonymous, but I don't know why. But here is my rant, and it is people who lean against the pole in the subway/metro. You know, it is just absolutely the reason that I'm going to commit my first homicide. I probably shouldn't say that in public, but I cannot stand it. I was reminded in New York that for all New York's faults, and believe me, there are many.
There's so many,
and there's a lot of problems with the subway in New York right now. But people do have the baseline of subway etiquette.
There's etiquette, for sure. Here, that's not a thing.
I don't know what happened in Paris that it didn't happen, but it is the same way that I have my bane of my existence being how people walk here. Like the fact that people don't let you out of the metro before you get on in Paris, like they just shove in before you're able to get out.
Yeah.
The pole thing is insane. Now, okay, if it's empty, there's no one there.
Of course.
You need to like send
an
email.
That pole if you want.
You rub up on that pole. You're like, what's the bear in Jungle Book? The bare necessities.
Oh yeah, were you?
Scratches back. You go to town. If there is a full subway, Paris doesn't have what New York has, which is those railings down the middle. So you can like, I'm tall, so I can usually like get up there and hold that. There's nowhere to hang on.
No,
so you're
really
stumbling around, and some girl or guy is up on there, and
sometimes I push them off.
Oh, but I like do this thing my friend does too, is like we put our hands behind it, then we like knuckle them. What do you do to push them off? What's your technique?
Well, same thing. I just put my hand.
Yeah.
And I usually do it near their, if it's a girl, near
their hair.
So they can feel it.
Smart. Whoa.
So they're like, no.
You guys should have seen Danny's eyes when she did that. It got dangerous.
No, because it's like, it's also like a weird intimate thing because it's like you're touching a stranger's hair.
Yeah, but you know what? They asked for it.
No, 100%. But it's even really weird for me because I'm like, I don't want to touch your disgusting hair.
No, but of course. Of course.
From.
Of course I don't want to touch their hair. But what is the alternative?
Yes. I'm like, we're all squished in here. Come on.
There's nowhere to hold on. Otherwise I'm stumbling around. I'm bumping into people. I don't know what to do.
I feel like people are not very aware of their surroundings in public transportation in Paris in general. And we can have an entire
podcast on that.
But I think the pole thing is really annoying. And it's like, we are packed. It's fucking rush hour. Everyone is like standing up against each other. And you decide to... I hate when they put their butts.
No.
I'm like, why? Like, hello?
No.
And then... Another thing, which is annoying, but it's not as annoying as the pole thing, is like they don't take their like
backpack,
they have a bag,
off,
or, yeah, they don't,
or
take
they don't
them
fold
off
up their scooters. Like people bring their
scooters
on and don't fold them up.
I want to fight.
No,
everyone,
but like
on the
there's nowhere to stand, there's nowhere to sit. It's just like pure insanity.
Yeah. So I'm fully with with you committing murder.
Okay.
Because of this.
Right.
Ugh. So, anyway.
Well, here we are at the end once again.
That's our episode. Yeah. It was a very food heavy episode.
Which is good. I hope you guys are starving. I feel like we're going to have a lot of strong thoughts on this for some reason.
I think there's just so many things we can cover with food. Yeah. Today was restaurant culture, and I think grocery stores, markets. There's just like so many things we can cover.
Yeah, it's true.
But overall, any final thoughts around the food differences?
I'm very curious
if restaurant culture.
Yeah, I'm curious if our New York subset is going to have strong thoughts on my like hot takes on how New York is.
I think a lot of people will agree. I remember like when my friend Olga came to Paris for the first time, she did say like, she said something about the vibe, also being like, I prefer the vibe in New York restaurants, but I like the food in Paris better or something like that. And I remember being like, that's so interesting. But I will say the last thing, up city that I think is a good middle in between the two cities.
I'm very curious.
Is London.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Only because I do think London has a lot of the creativity that New York has.
London kicks me out too, though. Huh? London's a very early.
They kick you out?
Yeah, they've kicked me out a couple of times.
That's never happened. Well, maybe I've just been.
All right, don't invalidate my experience.
No, I mean, in my experience, they want me to stay longer. No.
Like, we hate your face.
No, but I will say, I don't remember service being as cutthroat, but I do remember the diversity and the food scene.
Oh, yeah.
London is really cool. Yes. And the innovation. I remember I went to a zero waste restaurant. Oh, we went together, actually, the one for Tara's birthday. It's everything was zero waste and very cool. And like, it's just like very cool food scene. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, very traditional things as well. Not as expensive as New York. More expensive.
Still
than
expensive.
Paris. Yeah, more expensive, but not as expensive as New York. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a middle ground between the two, mm-hmm. where there's a lot of like the innovation, diversity that New York has. And then I think a lot of the European influences as well, where like,
it's true. I do think it's probably a merger. I'm so hesitant to say anything positive about London because my ex lived there and obviously just
But I think
just
you need
me.
To reclaim London.
I'm going. Well, everyone knows I'm going in 2 weeks.
Okay, great.
So I'll go. I'll report back.
Yeah.
And then we can do a little.
Oh my God. I need to send you all the places I've been saving. I need to go back to London because I think London has a great scene. Salad places, a million good salad places.
Yeah.
Like, there's just like a lot of things
lot of fast cash.
That I miss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also let us know if you guys feel like you have a city.
Yeah. What
if
do you
like
think?
An in-between city. Let me know if you feel like I'm totally wrong on New York with like New York thoughts. But cool. All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
This was Clashes,
a podcast brought to you by two idiots.
Clearly. I don't know if I can laugh on cue.